James Shields. Do we have a final line update?
He went 2 innings, 8 hits and 2 walks, 7 earned runs, 3 homers.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So that's, holy cow. So that's, what, 17 runs in his last 4 innings?
Yeah, yeah. His ERA is 5.06 right now on the season.
Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 94 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus. Today's episode is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for, yes, geeks, nerds, comic book lovers, and pop culture aficionados. Every month, subscribers receive a mystery box full of collectibles, figurines, apparel, and memorabilia. For less than $20 a month, you will receive 6 to 8 items. Each box contains, get this, at least $45 in value. You're doubling your money right there. And many of these items are created exclusively for the Loot Crate community, which means you can't buy some of these items anywhere else. Each crate has a theme centered around major franchises, theatrical releases, and events. June's theme is Dystopia. It features items from classics like RoboCop, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, The Matrix. Greg Wellemeyer's here. I know he's a big Matrix fan, right, Greg?
Oh, sure.
As well as favorites like BioShock, Infinite, and Fallout 4. If you're a video game fan, you definitely want to check this one out from Loot Crate. So you have until June 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time, gotta note Pacific time, to subscribe and receive that month's crate. When that happens, it's over. You can't get it. So make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/BP to subscribe today. That's our presenting sponsor, Loot Crate. We've got Greg Wellemeyer of Baseball Prospectus filling in. Brett Sayer and Mike Gianella have the night off. So, Greg, it's great to have you on the show. How's it going?
It's going pretty well, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Got big shoes to fill.
Well, I mean, Brett and Mike are pretty good at this fantasy baseball thing, I hear. So we do have a couple of cool things going on that I want to touch on before we get into the show. We're going to do Expert Fab. We're going to talk some starting pitchers. Greg, if you follow his work on BP, he writes the starting pitching planner every week. So he's sort of our guru looking ahead, and we're going to touch on some hot pitchers and sort of our starting pitcher tiered rankings and where he would move some guys up or down. And we're also going to finish with some MLB draft talk as well. So we have a lot to get to, but two quick things for BP events. Baseball Prospectus Night at Citi Field is July 9th. I'm going to be there. So many other people from BP are going to be there. There's going to be a special panel featuring Sandy Alderson, the general manager of the New York Mets. We're also going to have a media panel, James Wagner, Chelsea James, Anthony DeComo. Lots of people from BP, Ben Lindbergh, our former editor-in-chief, the co-author of The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, Jeff Paternostro, Brett Sayer, Craig Goldstein, Mike Gianella. Everyone's going to be there. So that's July 9th at Citi Field. Tickets are, how much are they? Let's see, $85, but you also get a fedora as well, so you should totally go to this event. I will be there. And then also, if you're in the Atlanta area on July 16th, we're hosting a Baseball Prospectus Night at Turner Field. There'll be a Q&A with Braves GM John Coppolella. So a lot going on. That's $60 to go to that one. If you're in the Atlanta area, you're not going to want to miss it. So two cool events. Greg, you should come up to Citi Field on the 9th.
I wish I could. I'm actually going to be on my summer vacation on the 9th, but that's a motley crew you just listed, and it's going to be an awesome event for sure. And Also wish I could go to the ATL. Are you going to fly down?
I might actually do this because it looks awesome. I know John Coppola is a big BP fan because they tweeted out a picture and he had the annuals all on the back shelf of the office there. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing that.
Yeah, so I know he's a big BP guy, and you know, you can't miss an opportunity to hear these guys talk about the game. It's a lot of fun. So stacked lineup for both of those events. You should go. It's totally going to be worth it. We've talked a lot already, but a little bit of housekeeping. You can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. Follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. Greg is at Greg Wellmeyer, correct?
Correct.
You can email us flagsflyforever at baseballperspectives.com. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes as well. So, Greg, let's dive right into the Expert Fab. You ready for this? You're going to take over Mike's role this week.
All right, let's do it.
Awesome. So Labor Mixed is where we'll start. Brett and Mike co-own the team there. I have no idea how they're doing, but I'm assuming it is well. Archie Bradley was the big pickup for $19. Let's see. Brett and Mike bid $13. They were beat out by Ray Murphy of Baseball HQ. Bradley's pitched well of late. The strikeouts have been there. What are your sort of impressions so far of Bradley this year, Greg? I don't know if you've had a chance to watch him at all, but it certainly looks like he's striking out a lot of batters at this point.
Yeah, for sure the strikeouts have been there, and they were in AAA as well. I think he was up over 10 strikeouts per nine in AAA. I got to see a few innings of his start. I think it was at Chicago. It was pretty sure it was against the Cubs anyways. And he looked mighty impressive in that game. I think his first start of the year, he was called up for a spot start. I want to say it was in Coors, and didn't fare quite as well. And he pitched this afternoon. I didn't get to see any of that. I was touched up a little bit. But, you know, this is a guy who was a top 20 prospect as recently as last offseason. So seems forgotten about a little bit because of a little bit of a rough stint in the majors last year. But you got to remember he took a batted ball off the dome. And that can't be easy to come back from. So I'm cutting him a little bit of leeway. I think the stuff is still there, and I think the strikeouts will be there. There's still a lot of questions to be answered about whether he can limit the walks. But I think this is a fair bid. I like it as an upside play and a bit of a gamble if you need a bump.
It certainly looks like Bradley's going to be able to hold down a rotation spot, at least for the rest of the season, with Ruby De La Rosa out for the year with a torn UCL. Arizona's an interesting rotation, a lot of strikeout potential there, especially with guys like Robbie Ray that aren't as highly regarded as obviously Greinke at the front of it. But yeah, Bradley's pitched well. He's certainly someone in a deeper format I would be looking at right now. Will Harris went for $12. I know there's some speculation that they're going to be in a committee. Well, I guess it was confirmed by the Astros that they're going to be going with a committee approach in the ninth, but this is more of a three-headed monster than just Harris and Gregerson with Ken Giles in the mix as well. How do you see this shaping out here in Houston? Because Harris has been really underrated for two seasons now. He's a guy who bounced around and was a good find off the scrap heap by the Astros, but I don't see him getting enough saves to really be worth a ton, especially in a mixed league. Is that how you see it, or do you like Harris more?
No, I agree with exactly what you said. I think he's been impressive and will continue to be. I think his ERA is like 0.3 or something ridiculous like that. And I'm not suggesting I think he's going to implode, but that save situation, that closer situation in Houston, I just don't really have any idea how to pick it right now. I guess if I had to bet, I'd still bet on Giles closing out the year with the most saves in Houston. I just really don't know how to put the odds on that three-headed monster right now.
Yeah, Zach Davies was another interesting pickup. He went for $7. Davies had a real nice start in his last time. I think he took what was a no-hitter into the late innings of his last start the other night.
Yep.
He's been good for Milwaukee, but he's not someone I've remotely followed at all. What have you watched Davies at all or anything? because I don't completely in the dark.
Yeah, I don't have much to tell you. I kind of just wrote off that that performance against the Cardinals last week, and then he followed it up with a pretty good one. I think it was yesterday. Maybe it was today. It's all running together against Oakland. So it's time to maybe look into that a little bit more. I think he's got a 2-start week this week, and so I wrote him up last week in the starting pitcher planner. I just kind of discounted him altogether, but it's time to dig in a little bit on him. I'm generally skeptical of kind of low velo righties, but he's had a couple or three good starts in a row here against one against the Cardinals, which is always tough to do.
Okay, I just pulled up his player page, and I am immediately skeptical of everything I see. 10 starts, 57 innings, right about. Under 7 strikeouts per 9, not good. The command, around 3 walks per 9, not great. ERA, 4.29. The DRA is actually higher. His CFIP is 108, so that's a predictive pitching metric for everyone listening. If you don't know what it is, you should. Jonathan Judge developed it. I trust him. It says that he's a below league average starter moving forward, basically. So I could see in the right matchup, in the right ballpark, he's a guy I would consider, but I'm not totally ready to buy in yet. And the numbers say that you should be skeptical. I'm always more skeptical of low strikeout starters than anything, because it's just your margin for error is so thin. You see it time and time again.
I agree.
All right, cool. Julio Urias was picked up for $5. The reason he was available, he was drafted on the reserve rounds of both Tout Wars leagues, but in labor, nobody picked him up in the reserve rounds. So it seems like everybody waited to avoid that matchup against the Cubs before bidding on him. There are obvious innings concerns. Last night, I think he threw 87 pitches before they lifted him after 4 innings. He was in line for the win. He pitched really well against Colorado. I actually watched pretty much all that start, and we can dive in on him now. I was going to talk about him later, but there's not a ton to say. I just think overall he looked a lot more comfortable last night against the Rockies. Greg, what have you follow prospects intently, you follow the minor leagues. Obviously, Urias was fantastic as a prospect, but what are your sort of impressions of him through, I think it's 3 starts now? Because I really like the stuff and I like what I think he can become, but right now he's just not a guy who's going to throw enough innings to be mixedly relevant in most cases.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think most of the people I've heard and read on our staff kind of are in line, and I agree that there's just not a whole lot of fantasy value for 2016. Doesn't mean that I and we aren't super high on him in the long term, but I just don't think the innings are going to be there. Even last night's start, like you referenced, he went 4 innings and the results were good, but there's only so much impact he can have if you're only going 4 and 5 innings in a start. And I have no idea how the Dodgers are going to treat him as we get later into the summer. I suspect, you know, he's definitely going to be on a cap, and it's interesting to see how they kind of ration out the innings. But I just don't see a whole lot of 2016 fantasy impact here, but the future is without question very bright.
Yeah, I think in a deep league, I think he's worth pitching in against the right teams at home. I wouldn't trust him in Coors or Wrigley or Chase Field or anything like that. But I guess in San Diego and at home, I'd feel pretty confident in the quality of those 4. Like last night, 4 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk. So he can do that, and I think he's going to be just fantastic in the long run. We're going to look back on this and like disbelief that he struggled as a rookie. I think it's going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And he may not struggle. I mean, he may pitch 4 or 5 innings of awesome ball every time he goes out there, but that's just tough to be impactful. And like you said, and much beyond deep or maybe mono leagues.
Yeah. So here's the crazy thing. Our show is targeted a little bit more towards redraft leagues. Just that's kind of our target market. And I think that's still a very popular format, but I know most fantasy owners play in dynasty leagues, so he's a guy who has probably been owned for, you know, 3 or 4 years now in those types of leagues. So you just don't talk about him unless you own him. So I had somebody who isn't really a baseball fan ask me, like, who's the most exciting player if I wanted to watch baseball right now that you would sort of target and just say, I'm going to watch this guy's career. I picked him because I think it's fascinating, the age and just the quality of the stuff. And I don't know. Is that, do you feel that way about him as well? Or is there a specific guy that you look at? If you, you know, had a friend who wasn't a baseball fan at all, like I did, who would you tell them to watch right now? If they could just pick one player and say, this might be the most fascinating guy to watch for the next decade.
Oh man, there are so many good options. I actually have a couple buddies who are big sports fans, but have kind of fallen out of baseball fandom in the last decade or so, and I've been trying to talk them back into it. If you're talking about in the whole league, I don't know. To me, it's still Kershaw. I mean, what he does every time out is just unbelievable. I don't know. It's hard not to go with the sheer dominance right now today of Kershaw. If you're talking about rookie eligible or prospect kind of guys, whew. I don't know. Urias is as good as anyone else in that regard. Yeah. Moncada would be interesting to follow. Everyone can get on board with that kind of premium athleticism, I think.
Yeah, I can't wait to see him face catchers who might have a chance to throw him out. I think that'll be an exciting challenge for him if he can, if they're going to finally promote him to Double A this summer. All right, we've digressed enough. Back to the fantasy talk. We had our fun. Anyone else here on the mixed side that is worth talking about out of the dollar guys? Because I don't see a ton here. I haven't been the biggest Tyler Naquin supporter in terms of I didn't think there was a huge ceiling here, but he's actually, you know, been really good lately. Michael Feliz is interesting in Houston if you're looking for a dark horse saves candidate. Anyone here?
Yeah, no, I agree on Feliz. I thought that was a nice dollar play. I don't know. What do you think about Chris Young? You're up there in New England. He's playing pretty much every day right now, isn't he?
Yeah, with Blake Swihart out, they don't actually really have another option. They're not going to play Ruznick Castillo. That Swihart injury is ugly because there's a chance he could be out the rest of the year. So when you look at the Red Sox as a whole, they don't have anyone really internally that can come up and play in the outfield. And because of the injury to Sam Travis, you know, unless you're talking about trading, you know, a Benintendi or a Moncada, you're not going to have the chips to go out and actually trade for another outfielder. So I think Chris Young, the playing time will be there. Brock Holt's on the DL with a concussion. The weird thing is he's hitting righties. I don't know how to explain it, but Chris Young's been pretty good. I like Sungwon Oh as well. He went for $2. If you look at by like CFIP, CFIP really loves him. It's down under 70, I think, right now. So those are two pickups I really liked as well. So, yep.
Yeah, he's been dominant. I like the Jaso ad for a buck, too. He's still hitting leadoff most days for the Pirates, and the counting stats haven't been great. But, you know, if you're talking about a 15-teamer or something of that depth, that's a pretty nice dollar ad.
Yeah, so we had actually a pretty interesting pickup on the AL side of Tout Wars. James Shields, it's a $1,000 fab budget. So, obviously, with him coming over from the NL, he's really the first big one, and I guess I forget who wrote this column. I think it was maybe Tristan Cockcroft of ESPN who wrote this column that I don't know if – maybe it wasn't him. I don't know. I feel like it was, but he doesn't see a whole lot of guys changing leagues this year in terms of trades. There might not be a lot of crossover, so – Shields might be a guy you throw down a big fab allocation on. He went for $671 out of a $1,000 fab. What do you think of Shields in Chicago? Because I think if you take out that one disaster of an outing he had, he hasn't really been that terrible in the grand scheme of things this year.
Yeah, I'm the wrong guy to ask if you're looking for optimism on Shields. I just have never been a huge fan. I'm just generally not a big fan of guys who outperform their kind of advanced stats, even though he's has a long track record of doing it. But the Matt Cains and James Shields of the world, I just never am in on those guys. I rightly or wrongly expect it to all kind of fall apart at any moment. And so Shields, I understand that the rationale makes sense if Tristan's right on that point. And it makes sense to go ahead and put down a huge chunk of what you got left if you need a boost in the standings. But I don't see it for Shields, and he's getting shelled tonight. I haven't looked since we got on the phone, but I think he gave up six runs in the first couple innings. So not that that means he's going to do that the rest of the way, of course, but I'm not a big Shields fan myself.
In the words of Dr. Seuss in The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, I wouldn't touch him with a 45.5-foot long pole or whatever. not for me. Boy, Will Harris went for $288. Raymond Fuentes for $41. We're going to talk about James Paxton in a little bit. I'm surprised he didn't go for more in an AL only. Anyone else that you want to talk about here? Because I don't think there's a ton.
I didn't really see anything else that's that I liked from Mike's column.
You're not a Chris Parmalee guy? Shocker.
not a huge Parmalee fan.
Hey, Tim Anderson for a buck. That could play off. He had a big 3-run homer. You're down. You're near the Charlotte area. You're by Durham, correct? In North Carolina.
Yeah. I'm in Durham, and I've seen Anderson play up here in Durham, and I do like him long term. Although, that speaking of profiles, I don't love that kind of profile is not my favorite in the prospect. I think he's going to have, and I think Brad or you
yes,
or
Brett.
one of you guys alluded to this. I think he's going to have a long adjustment period. I just don't see the impact here in the near term. I do like him in the long run, but I struggle to see how he's going to be able to hit or get on base enough to use those wheels in the immediate aftermath of a call up.
Yeah, I think I should have specified. I like him in a keeper league, a dynasty league, a lot. But yeah, this year I don't see a whole lot happening there. But long term, definitely. On the NL side, Jimmy Paredes. I can never say his name correctly. Is it Paredes? Paredes? I can't do it. I have no idea. Do you have a preferred pronunciation?
I'll go with Paredes.
I don't even think I said that.
I'm sure that's wrong, but that's what I'm going to go with.
He sounds like an It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia character to me. I always feel like that. He went for a good chunk of change. Eric Johnson for $97. Boy. I don't know anything here because I don't see a lot. Albert Suarez pitched well against the Red Sox last night, which is something because their offense is insane. But they were playing without Ortiz, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. There's not a whole lot here either. Man, it's getting ugly real quick on the NL only side.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. We've done our weekly tradition here. It's a dystopian wasteland over on the NL. Hashtag loot crate. Lootcrate.com/BP. Sign up today. I'd trade half my TDGX team for a loot crate right now. Legit. All right. Let's talk about some pitchers that have been really good of late. I think this is one area where if you can react to changes in player value faster than your opponents, I think that's one strategic area. We're going to have Jeff Quinton on to talk about this, you know, in a future podcast, but it's becoming more and more apparent to me that if you can catch a pitcher who's made a change and all of a sudden they're performing at a higher level than previously, I think that has some value. Also, going the other way, if you notice some problems with a pitcher or a hitter, I think that's really one area where you can gain an advantage. With so much information out there now, there's nobody who doesn't know what they're doing or doesn't have access to the information to be able to make good decisions. So I think that player analysis is really the one area you can gain an advantage. Have you sort of noticed that as well, Greg, or what's your general take on that? Now, we talked a little bit about this before the show, but, you know, guys like Danny Valencia, where there are just huge changes in their profile, do you feel like it's becoming more important to react to those, you know, more quickly now instead of, you know, waiting and potentially missing out on an opportunity?
Yeah, well, I think you always have to. It's part of the challenge of fantasy, I think, is figuring out which players to react quickly on, because the nature of it is that if you don't buy quick, somebody else is going to. And so you don't always have the kind of time to get a sample size that you can believe in before you are forced to make a decision on whether you want to buy.
Yeah.
So I do think there's merit to your point that there's enough information out there, and assuming you're playing in a competitive league, if you're listening to us and reading BP, you're going to have to jump on players who change value pretty quick if you want them.
Yeah, obviously there are small sample caveats with everything, but I think some of the guys we're going to talk about, they've made some noticeable adjustments, and the results have been pretty good so far. The first guy, we've hinted at it, but James Paxton. If you're a Brooks baseball fanatic or you like the BP PitchFX leaderboards, he's a guy who really literally jumps off the page right now. He's made two starts. He made 10 in AAA to start the year, 50 strikeouts and 47 innings there. But through two starts, he has the weirdest stat line ever. In 9 2/3 innings, he's allowed 15 hits, 11 runs, but only four of those are earned. He has 17 strikeouts and just two walks. The cool thing about Paxton is his average fastball velocity is up over 98 miles per hour right now. 98.6, which is about 4 miles per hour faster than guys like Robbie Ray and Steven Matz. So other left-handed starters who have pretty much the fastest fastballs in the game. I don't count Danny Duffy for the record because he was out of the bullpen. So I don't know if his velocity as a starter is different than when he was in relief. But yeah, Paxton is throwing insanely hard and the strikeouts are there. What are your thoughts on Paxton so far, Greg?
Yeah, the velocity has been incredible. I think I was looking at Twitter the other night and all of a sudden my timeline was flooded with mentions of him hitting 101, and turned out that might have been a little exaggeration, or a hot stadium gun, one or both of those things. But the velocity is definitely up a couple or 3 miles an hour, and that makes him more interesting. Of course, more velocity is never a bad thing. You mentioned Brooks baseball. I did go back and look at whether he'd ever pitched a fastball that fast before, and he actually did throw over 100 back in 2014, but not in any sustained way that we've seen in his outings this year. It's with Paxton, it's really a two-part question. It's, can he stay healthy, and can he not walk people? Even with the velocity, if he's issuing walks at 4 per 9 or 3.5 per 9, which is about where he's been in his short and injury-riddled career, then he's not going to be super valuable anyways. But it's definitely intriguing. 16 Ks per nine, although it's only over 10 innings, is something to behold.
Yeah, I think considering the acquisition cost, I mean, we actually just talked about this in the expert fab bidding, but no one really put all their chips, you know, to the center of the table to go try and acquire him. I think there's still some skepticism, which is warranted given the injuries in previous years. But I think the strikeouts are valuable, and at a certain point here, you have to take that into account and say, look, he might post a high ERA. That's reasonable. It could happen. But right now the command's been good. He's throwing a lot of strikes and the strikeouts are there. So I thought, you know, what really stood out to me was that the swing rates are really up on his fastballs. He's getting a lot more swings and a lot more whiffs on those swings. He's throwing his cutter and sinker about 30% of the time now. The fastball, he's down under 50% for the first time in his career with just a straight fastball. So I like what I've seen from Paxton, and considering it's not going to cost a lot to go out and get him, I think I'd be willing to take a shot on him as sort of the last guy in my rotation right now at this point. I know it's only 10 innings, but hard not to be impressed with those.
Yeah, I agree, and you mentioned it, but he has pounded the zone in these couple starts. So if that, you know, becomes a trend, then I think the labor mix bid was $3. I mean, it's hard to argue with $3, even if you're only going to get 50 or 60 innings out of it.
Right. He could give you more than that potentially. We don't know what's going to happen there. Michael Fulmer of Detroit. He's a guy who's gone 6 innings and 4 straight starts. He's allowed just 1 earned run total over those 4 starts. 27-7 strikeout to walk ratio. He's looked really good so far. His CFIP is 84, which is really good. In 8 starts, he is a sub-3 ERA. I was skeptical of Fulmer to begin the year, but he's kind of won me over in the last 2 weeks or so, which I wasn't totally expecting. Has Fulmer exceeded your expectations as well this year? Because for me, I think he has.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was kind of lukewarm on him, especially after the first 3 or 4 starts that he struggled through in his major league career. But even after the next couple, he struck out 11 over 7 innings and won, and then he went almost 8 in his next 2. And in one of those, I think he carried a no-hitter into the 7th or maybe 6th. I can't remember. But he's looked mighty impressive lately. I'm not convinced he's anywhere near this good, obviously, on a true talent level. I think I said this in the last pitching planner where he came up. He's somewhere between, where he started the season and where he is now. But that still makes him a mid to back end fantasy starter. I think there's a lot to like in what he's shown the last couple of weeks here.
Yeah, Matt Shoemaker for the Angels is our next guy we're going to talk about. I wrote about him in the free agent pickup column. I write that along with J.J. Jansen's, who we had on the show earlier this year, every single week. And Shoemaker, to me, what stands out is that he's throwing a ton of splitters right now. If you look at his pitch usage by month, he's up around 40% right now, which is up significantly. He's also throwing his slider 20% of the time. So basically, he's throwing something with movement about 60% of the time right now at this point, which is not something he's done in recent years. In his last 4 starts dating back to May 21st, he's gone 30 1/3 innings, which is amazing. He's given up 28 hits, but only 8 earned runs during that stretch. His strikeout to walk ratio, 37-0. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
I guess he's just throwing strikes, and you know, that's the way it's gonna be. He'd rather eat glass than issue a walk right now. So Shoemaker, I don't know. I wasn't expecting this.
Yeah, I don't really know what to say either. I watched a good bit of his start last night because I wanted to see this new pitch mix, and he's up over 40% usage on his splitter, I think. Yeah. His last 4 or 5 starts, and the results, they speak for themselves. I think he said 37 strikeouts to no walks. He did get beat up a little bit late in the game yesterday, but he was cruising through 5 or 6 innings and then gave up a couple bombs in Yankee Stadium. But this is an unbelievable turnaround for a guy who was terrible, frankly, last year, through a long stretch of last year and early this year, and was down in AAA, had to come back up. So I'm kind of buying. I had someone ask me, I think in the comments section, if I had to pick between Shoemaker and Fulmer for the rest of the year, which way I'd go, and I said Shoemaker, and I think I'll stand by that for now as long as he keeps his pitch mix and as long as it seems to keep batters off balance.
I'm trying to think of a good comp for Shoemaker because I'm not sure he can do this over like 180 innings, but if he does, he's basically Masahiro Tanaka, right?
Yes.
He's a top 25 starter at this point. Tanaka is. Boy.
I tend to share some of that skepticism, although I just said I'd take him over Fulmer. There is some element of this that makes me wonder, you know, okay, once batters have time to adjust to the new Matt Shoemaker, if this is all just going to be, you know, some smoke and mirrors, it's not going to last.
You know what it reminds me of? Phil Hughes, when he had that crazy good year, I think it was 2014. He just didn't walk anybody. He gave up runs, but he posted a crazy strikeout to walk rate. I think it was like almost 200-16 or something crazy like that. I think Shoemaker could maybe do something like that, where he posts an ERA, you know, close to four, but really good strikeout numbers. I don't know. I really don't know what to make of Shoemaker, but the numbers have been really good lately. I'm going to give you three guys, and you're going to get to pick one. How's that sound?
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
These three guys have been pitching well of late. They're not owned in a ton of leagues, which surprised me a little bit. Danny Duffy, in his last five starts, he has a 3.60 earned run average. He struck out 28 with only two walks in his last 25 innings. Trevor Bauer, he's allowed more than three earned runs in just one of his eight starts this year, which is basically a very anti-Bauer. Jared Eichhoff, yeah, pretty much. Jared Eichhoff has a 3.68 earned run average. He struck out 62 batters in 12 starts this year. He's only, I think he's 3-8 is his record, despite pitching pretty well. If you had to pick one of those guys going forward, who would it be? They're very diverse.
They are, but they're very different collection of pitchers, but they're all kind of right in the same range for me. Let's see. Duffy, I don't think, has walked a batter in his last four, so he's doing a little Matt Shoemaker thing in a sense too. But I'm not convinced that he's we'll have to see. I like what I've seen. I'm intrigued, but I still want to see a little bit more as he continues to get stretched out and becomes a more permanent fixture in their rotation. But I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think I'm going to go with Bauer.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, I think I shocked myself too. But in the absence of a good sense of what these guys are going to be able to do in terms of run prevention, I think I'll just go for the strikeout upside. And I think Bauer has the most of that. He's actually been pitching a little deeper into games this year, and at least in part because he's shaved a few walks off of his line. I don't know. I hate to gamble on wins, but I like that Cleveland team a little bit more than I like the other two clubs right now. And so I could see an argument for any of the three. I'd probably go Bauer, Duffy, Eichhoff.
Yeah, I like Duffy. I have some questions as to whether or not he'll actually stick in the rotation, but I think what he's doing ever since he moved to the bullpen last year, I've liked his approach. Bauer, to me, I've never had a chance to talk with him, and that's something I'd love to do, because if you could pick his brain, it's like an encyclopedia of pitching knowledge. He basically built himself into one of the best pitchers in the nation as a high school and in a collegiate player. But man, like, he always seemed like a guy who was too smart to never figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, it seems anecdotal, but right? It just seemed like one of these days he was going to get it.
Right, and he's only 25. He just turned 25, so it seems like he's been kind of in our consciousness forever. But in the grand scheme of things, he's still kind of just getting started in his career. And if he can kind of keep up what he's done the last several starts, I think he'll carve out a more lockdown position in their rotation. CFIP has him just under 100. I think he's right at 99. So he's about league average what he's done so far. And I just think the strikeouts will probably be there. And if he can continue to grow, which there seems reasonable to think he could, given his age, there's still some upside left in there.
Yeah, and I'm going to wrap up the segment by saying, if for some reason you have a chance to acquire Drew Pomeranz, Rich Hill, or Stephen Wright, you should do that. Mike, Brett, and I we've been talking, it feels like, about those three pitchers specifically for the last 2 months or so, it feels like, because when I look at the general pool of starters, they seem to be consistently undervalued in that people are extremely skeptical of either the profile or the arsenal or the results, and they're just not investing at the level they should. So I like those three guys. That they really stand out for me. So I'll just ask you, I guess just generally, who are some guys that you think are undervalued? I know that's a vague term that could apply to a lot of things or a lot of people, but this will be a good transition into our general look at the tiered starting pitcher rankings. But who are maybe some names that stand out to you at this point of guys that you like that maybe generally fantasy owners haven't been as high on this year. Is there anyone that stands out to you from that?
I continue to be intrigued and teased by Eovaldi up in New York. I think he's got the makings to be much better than he's been in terms of the results he puts down on, you know, onto his player page and onto his record. It's still hugely up and down. You get some starts where you're like, whoa, how does anybody hit this guy? And you get others where it's just his fastball is flat and guys are just teeing off on him. So he's one kind of near the bottom of, I think, of our tiered re-ranks that that I continue to like. I think I liked him as a dollar in our preseason rankings. Let's see here. Sonny Gray. I mean, he's back. We'll see if he's healthy, but seems like a lot of fantasy players have just given up on him, and I think it's way too early to do that.
Well, especially in redraft leagues, I think there was a lot of, all right, I'm just completely out. I'm either going to drop him or I'm going to trade him for nothing just to free up the roster spot. In a lot of cases, once he went on the DL, he was in our one-star tier on the re-ranks. This was a couple weeks ago while he was injured. How high would you put him? Would you move him up to the two-star or the three-star tier, which would be in the territory? The three-star tier would put him in the territory of guys like Jeff Samardzija, Wei-Yin Chen, Gio Gonzalez. I think he's up there for me at this point now.
Yeah, no, I agree, and this is not a case where I have like an analytical thing to point to and say this is why I think that, other than the fact that he's Sonny Gray and he's been awesome for several years, and I just want to see in situations like this, I tend to want to see more poor performance before I'm willing to write him off. And when I look at some other options in our three-star tier, and this is not a knock on Mike and or Brett who put this together, but now that Gray is back healthy, I just prefer him to guys like Tomlin and Alex Wood and Chris Tillman, yeah, even Tanner Roark. So I think he has a good solid case to be above those guys.
Yeah, I think a lot of the uncertainty surrounding the injury was built into the one-star rank here. I think that's what stands out. But, you know, I was pretty vocal in my criticism of Gray in the preseason because I felt like he was getting drafted like a top 20 guy in some cases, and I didn't feel like he should have been in that class. But I certainly didn't think he'd fall outside, you know, the top 40 to 50 starters by the end of the year. I didn't see that happening, but it's good to see him back and pitching well. Another guy who's doing that is Yu Darvish. He was good his first two starts. Tonight, last time I checked, he had just a boatload of strikeouts. So he went 5 innings tonight against the Astros and struck out 7. I think he walked a bunch of guys, but he struck out at least 5 in his first 3 outings. He was in the 3-star tier, which is like the 35 to 40 range. How high would you be willing to move up Darvish at this point in a redraft?
Well, I really like what I've seen. His velo has been up, which is really surprising.
Curveball is good too.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty. He's another one of those guys like Eovaldi, except for way more often. You're just like, I don't understand how you're supposed to try to hit this guy. I'd move him up into the back half of the 4-star tier. You're talking about guys like Francisco Liriano, Rich Hill, Jordan Zimmermann. I think he belongs certainly with those guys, and you could probably make an argument to push him up a little higher than that.
Aaron Sanchez has been really good. He seems like a guy who's putting it all together, I guess would be the in quotes. I don't know if I'd call it a breakout because we always knew Sanchez had the stuff. We just weren't sure he was going to put it together as a starter. But he was ranked, 77 in the 2-stars range of the tiered ranking. So he's a guy who was really low. Let me give you a couple names, I guess is the best way. Well, first of all, let me get your take on Sanchez. Have you been impressed with his last couple of outings? I guess it's hard to not be, but what have you thought of Sanchez recently?
Extremely impressed. I mean, he was disgusting last night, just 12 strikeouts over 8 innings. I kind of wondered out loud in last week's column why no one was talking about Sanchez's season. It seems like, and maybe I just haven't read where people have written about it, but he's another guy who is an elite level prospect. You know, really recently as last year, he was in our top 25, I think, at BP, and in the 30s the year before that. So this is a guy with a huge amount of pedigree. And there's really nothing in the underlying numbers to suggest that what he's done is fluky. The ground ball percentage is pushing 60%. It's one of the best in the league. So that takes a little bit of the concern of Toronto's home field away. And he's just nasty. I mean, I like him a lot. I think this is real. I think if you can find an owner who doesn't believe in it for whatever reason, although that's going to be harder after last night's performance, then you should buy him.
Yeah, I remember a time when Sanchez versus Stroman was a legitimate debate, and the argument in Stroman's favor was, well, we kind of know he can start. With Sanchez, we weren't completely sure whether or not he was going to end up a starter, and he's not going back to the bullpen. There obviously is an inning ceiling, so you have to take that into consideration. Let's see here.
Yeah, it's a good point. He pitched. Sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, he pitched just barely more than 100 last year, and he's at 80 right now. So the innings concern is real, and I think it's something to keep an eye on. And I'll be interested to see how the Blue Jays play it.
I don't think he can get to 200. Is my point.
He's an important asset for them going forward. I can't see them risking his arm. He's a good sized guy, but yeah, I'd be surprised if they let him push much past, I don't know, 160, 170.
So naturally, I mean, you're looking at maybe he has 100 innings left this year. That's, you know, if he goes, you know, 6 innings to start, he's not going to make it till September. So if you're a contending team and you own Aaron Sanchez, isn't this basically the time to sell him at this point?
In a redraft?
In a redraft. Not a dynasty. You don't trade him. You probably don't trade him in a dynasty.
Yeah, I think you could make that point. You could make that point. The return would have to be – I might wait a little bit longer if I could, just to try to squeak a little bit more out of him, because like I said, I do think that what he's doing right now is the real thing, and I expect him to continue to be really solid moving forward. But you don't want to get to a point where everybody knows he's got – you know, 40 or 50 innings left, and then you're going to have to sell them for 50 cents on the dollar.
All right, well, I'm going to put you on the hot seat here. Who would you rather have? Let's say you were trading Aaron Sanchez, and I offered you Sonny Gray. Would you take it?
I'd take Sanchez.
Okay. Let's go a little higher. Those guys aren't good. Considerably higher. Gio Gonzalez or Aaron Sanchez?
Aaron Sanchez.
Oh, well, I was going to say Vince Velasquez, but we really don't know now. here's a good one. I'm sorry. Oh, well, he could be fine. I mean, he says he's fine. Chris Archer or Aaron Sanchez?
Aaron Sanchez.
Okay, this is bold. I like it. Let's go a little higher. Rich Hill or Aaron Sanchez? Basically, they're the same thing innings-wise. That's not a good one, but who would you rather have?
This is a little tougher, but I think I'll take Sanchez. I agree that the innings thing is similar, but it's a little different in the sense that Hill is more of an injury concern and Sanchez is more of an innings cap concern, and maybe that's just too much nuance, but I do think there's a difference there, and I'll take the innings cap over the health risk.
Now we're getting real. We're talking top 25 range starters. Aaron Nola or Aaron Sanchez? Battle of the Aarons.
Oof.
I think we
give me Nola.
Yeah, see, I think we've hit that range. So he's maybe a top 25 to 30 starter at this point. You're talking Carlos Martinez, Dallas Keuchel, Cole Hamels range almost.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I would not disagree with you. Basically, he's Carlos Carrasco. like results wise, like statistically, that's what we're seeing right now, right?
A few less K's, but yeah, he's not too dissimilar.
Yeah, okay, I like that comp. Let's see, who else? I don't really have anyone else that I think is worth talking about. Oh, one guy. I know you're the high guy on Kyle Hendricks here. he was in the 3-star tier, and I was like, oh man, like I think I'd almost bump him up into the top 30, but I don't know. Would you be willing to do that at this point? Because I really do like Hendricks, and I look at the rest of that tier and I go, man, I'd much rather have him than like Jay Happ or Nate Carnes, Tanner Roark, guys like that. I wouldn't put them in the same tier necessarily, is my point.
Yeah, I prefer Hendricks to all those guys you just said too. You know, the K's have backed up a little bit this year, but he's not walking quite as many guys as he did last year. His ground ball rate's bumped up another 5 percentage points or so. I mean, it's hard not to believe in what he's doing. I don't know that he's a sub-3 ERA going forward, but I do think he's a rock solid, you know, high SP3, I guess I would say.
Yeah, Kyle Hendricks or James Shields, go.
That's easy. I'll take the Cub.
All day.
Yeah.
James Shields. Do we have a final line update? If you're listening here to this podcast, you probably either already know it or you can go find it easily. But I don't know it, so I want to know. Can we get
looks,
this?
Yeah, hang on. I'm trying to arrive there if my computer would cooperate. This is good radio right here. He went 2 innings, 8 hits and 2 walks, 7 earned runs, 3 homers.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So that's, holy cow. So that's, what, 17 runs in his last 4 innings?
Yeah, yeah. His ERA is 5.06 right now on the season. Okay. It's not pretty. I'm sure the folks on the South Side are buying up James Shields jerseys as we speak.
They should be, because they're not going to be in stock for very long. They're like the Julio... I remember seeing a Julio Lugo t-shirt back in the day here in Boston.
Wow. Wow. Yeah,
good times. Yeah. All right. I don't have much else. Do you want to wrap up with a little quick MLB draft talk here? Because I know you're a draft aficionado and sometime pop culture aficionado. Hashtag Loot Crate. Give me your take. What's going to happen tomorrow in this draft?
I think much like everybody else, I have no idea what's going to happen. It seems like there's more chaos this year than I can remember in years past.
It's dystopic.
And it is all the mock drafts out there are a dystopia of prediction right now. I'm excited for it. I love the draft. I don't know that I'd call myself an aficionado, but I do love kind of digging into these players as a good introduction to them as they enter our consciousness for fantasy purposes and real life purposes. And there are a few players I'm pretty excited about, but mostly I'm just excited to see kind of how it all shakes out tomorrow. There are a lot of teams that have big bonus pools and can do some cool stuff. So I'm interested to see what happens.
Have you finally settled on the Kyle Lewis, Corey Ray debate? Because that one to me is interesting. I'm not sure who I would take.
I think I change my mind every time I think about it. I don't know. I mean, the ceiling with Lewis is the draw, and I think the floor with Ray. I'd probably go Ray if it was me making the pick, because it seems like it would be the one less likely to have me lose my job. But but I do think the upside is greater with Lewis, and I agree with Jim Callis and kind of his take on it. Yeah, he played in the Southern Conference, but he beat up the Southern Conference, which is what you would expect him to do, given how much better he is than most of the players in that conference. So I don't hold that against him necessarily, but I love Corey Ray.
I like Mickey Moniak for what I think he's going to do. He's got a good hit tool. It seems like a guy who is going to make a ton of contact, I think, even at the big league level when he eventually gets there in like 50 years. but, you know, Good.
Yeah, but between that and the center field profile, I think, you know, he's a good one for real life purposes.
Good plug in there, by the way, getting Jim Callis in there. He came on Tino last week. So if you haven't listened to that, if you're a big draft Nick, I think that's the right term, you should check that out. Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline. He was great. He talked for a long time about fantasy prospects in the draft for the Tino podcast. So you should go check that out as well. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll wrap things up here on Flags Fly Forever. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 94 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been and always will be a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast, I think. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for a super premium membership. Get access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Greg is at Greg Wellemeyer. I am at George Bissell. If you want to email us with topics, suggestions, whatever you got, tell us about your feelings, stuff like that, email us flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. I totally jacked that line from Carsley. He'll be mad at me. you should go read Greg's stuff. Greg Wellemeyer's got a couple of good columns he writes for BP. He does the five to watch. He had a column up on Double A hitters this week. Some interesting names there if you play in a deep dynasty. He also does our starting pitching planner every single week. So if you have start sit decisions, he's your guy. Check it out at BP. So, Greg, hey, thanks again for coming on. Really, really appreciate you taking the time tonight. It's good to have you.
Yeah, man, it was a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. For Greg Wellemeyer, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until our next show next week, good night, everybody.